So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this National. I'm Pete, and of course I'm with Tim. Tim, man, what's going on?
Same old, same old. Doing pretty good. It was raining for about a week here in LA, which is always fun because people don't know how to drive, and the roads are ridiculous. I actually drove up into like the hills on one day when it was raining, and it was really annoying because when I was all the way out there, the freeway and the roads were all clear and they drained properly and everything is nice. And then when you drive through LA City, the part of the freeway that has the most traffic and the most people who don't know how to fucking drive, there's giant puddles and it doesn't drain very well and all that. So it's just super annoying. You would think that you'd want it to be the opposite, but I guess it makes sense. Driving through the mountain, you don't want the road to be wet or whatever. That could be dangerous too, but still, it's just annoying. But yeah, that other than that, it's been a pretty quiet week for the most part for me.
Yeah, I mean, I know you were at PWG last night. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Full house, though, right?
I wouldn't say full. It was nice. It's the least full that I've been to a show at the Globe. And probably the least full that I've been to a PWG show in general in a long time, really. But that's also because the building is bigger, so.
Did you happen to catch the Nigel McGuinness documentary on the WWE Network?
No, I saw the commercials and stuff for it, but I didn't watch it myself, especially because I was slightly confused and I didn't realize if it was a different thing or if they were playing the same doc that he made years ago or what that was about.
No, this is definitely new, but with footage, you could tell it was probably, I have never watched that doc, but I'm sure there was some footage taken from it. Because they had, you know, past stuff and stuff and what he was doing.
Right. Which, that documentary is a rough watch, man. It's pretty sad.
Okay, this was more way upbeat. I think they took the bad and stuff. But, you know, in the end now, he's working for the WWE. So everything's, you know, unicorns and babies and stuff. So, but I would recommend watching. It's really interesting and... And it's really cool watching him, and like something that was really, I thought was really neat was how Nigel was honest on his background, and that's why he never got his contract, because he was honest about an injury, while Daniel Bryan was brought in at the same time and lied on his things, and kind of look how much Daniel Bryan ended up suffering for years because of not telling the truth and stuff, and how the landscape of wrestling could have changed differently if Daniel Bryan never got his shot in the WWE.
Yeah, that is really interesting, and it's something I was actually thinking about semi-recently, too, with people coming in and out of WWE's giant umbrella. How enforced is the medical stuff being? How could it possibly be super strict? With some of the people that you see getting a shot and coming back, the old timers and stuff like that, comparatively to like just a couple of years ago when Shirai wasn't able to be in the Mae Young Classic because of medical stuff. So it's just like, it's interesting. The landscape feels like it's changed a lot to the point where people are, they're kind of turning a blind eye to some stuff like that. And to think that Daniel Bryan not being honest about something that ended up coming back to haunt him, but also completely changed the course of the wrestling world.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We see Daniel Bryan actually make the statement himself about him actually lying. So it wasn't like hinted at or anything. It was a flat out him making that statement. And what about the Mean Gene special? Did you happen to catch that one?
No, I didn't see that either.
Yeah, no, they're just super fun. A lot of outtakes, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. A lot of, you know, talking heads, we got a lot of interviews with Gene talking about moments and stuff, but I thought it did a really good job of capturing the spirit of Mean Gene. I thought they did a fantastic job on both of those things, and they're really, definitely, I would say if you have time and they're not even that long. I think the Mean Gene one was like 32 minutes, Nigel's was 47 minutes, so I mean, If you have the time, and you should find the time to watch both those, I would recommend it to anybody listening. Of course, AEW is all over the news. I guess they showed up in
Bar wrestling.
A bar wrestling, you know. I'm finding some of the stuff interesting. Like I think it's cool if wins and losses are gonna matter. Are they gonna, like, I've been hearing Cody saying how they're gonna do keep records of people. I find that hard to believe, because that actually becomes an albatross, and if you miss something, I don't know. I don't know how you can really do wins and losses, and do it with credibility, because eventually there'll be house shows or this or that, and the work sport. I don't necessarily think you need to have a win loss record, and yeah, I mean, it enhances certain things like the G1. I think I remember Meltzer mentioning how wins and losses really enhance that, because people get into it because of the wins and losses. But I don't know, on the grand scheme, wins and losses really matter. I do think to get a be a full-blown babyface, I think you need to have wins and stuff, and I think wins and losses do matter, but I don't think you need to have the minutia of it actually having an actual scorecard for your record and stuff. What do you think?
I think it's difficult. I don't think anybody has pulled it off super well, so I wouldn't expect them to be the first place where they're able to. I think some people have the exact opposite take as me, and they believe that this is going to be somehow the perfect promotion that's able to pull it off. Just because of the people that you have assembled and their backgrounds and the way that they can make everything work. I don't know. Comparatively to the G1, I mean, the thing is that the G1 is the basis of the entire year for the booking and the storyline. So people say or can compare it that way to wins and losses mattering there, but it's really, I mean, it's, I won't say like a trick, but it's kind of like a parlor trick in that the booking is very basic, and the only, you get to really set your hierarchy every year just in the G1, and then everything else is booked around that. So it is kind of a trick in some ways, because it doesn't go back year over year really, on how much wins and losses matter. All that really matters for that year specifically will be how you did in the G1. I mean, you can look at people historically who have dog years in the G1 and don't win any matches, and then they can come back and just have a year where they win a bunch of matches, and it's treated as if the past year didn't matter, right? And that does make sense in a sports setting too. And seasons in sports work the same way, basically. So it's just basically more based on really sports style booking, which I don't know if you can have a full-time roster that has primarily singles matches, which is another trick that they do in New Japan, is that those top stars are not wrestling each other all the time in singles matches outside of the G1. So
Yep.
that's why that's able to be the background and the basis of wins and losses matter, because then you turn around and all the multi-man matches and all the other wins and losses are not treated as if they matter as much, because they're not in the context of a singles match. So they matter, but not to the same extent. So you could even nitpick that being not the same. So all of it's difficult. You talked about it in a worked sport. It's really hard because, as stupid as this might sound to people who like have the concept of sports, like in combat sports, it's a little bit subjective. Wins and losses can matter, but it is also still a little bit subjective. Just look at UFC. I mean, they have the same complaints from people, and that's not a work sport, that matches are not booked properly. And in a lot of ways, it's a matter of opinion slightly. It's like they're not putting absolute dogs in title contention, but they're putting, maybe you think this guy is not the number one contender for a title, but he's getting it because it's a mix of things. It's not just the wins loss record, but it's other factors. And you can say that draw and all that stuff shouldn't be part of it, and I can even agree with you there, but there is also level of performance. There is also expectation. I mean, how many times are there people who are the best in their division, but there's one person they can't beat, and that person happens to be the champion? And what are you going to do? Is every title fight is going to be that guy until he finally wins the belt? Like, you're not going to do it that way, because it's just not fair, because that person's already proven that they can't beat the champ, even if they can beat everybody else. So you got to mix up the champ with other people to see who, if someone can dethrone them, because that's just how it works. So that's why, like, wins and losses mattering, yes, but it's also not strict. And then there's always going to be a level of, subjectivity that people are going to complain about no matter what you do. You could
Yeah.
be as strict as you want to it. There's always going to be someone who finds a way to nitpick.
Exactly. And then another here, I've been hearing there might, They're gonna use like the top 10, which I've always liked. I loved when WCW used to do it. But again, they didn't stick to it religiously, so it became more of a you remember when they were doing it as opposed to how well they did it. And I always thought that was kind of a cool factor, which, you know what, if you're booking, it's something you really could be able to do. And I don't see why you shouldn't be able to do it. So I feel like that might work. They're like their top 10 rankings or what have you. You've been hearing, you know, all these other rumors, like the Revival want their release. Dolph Ziggler turned down a producer's job. So there's all this stuff going around on who's disgruntled, who might be making a jump to AEW. Right now, there's just all this wild speculation, and I find it fascinating. And again, to me, I want competition, so I'm hoping for the best for the guys, even though I'm not a huge fan of, I've never been a big, huge fan of the Young Bucks. I don't think they're the greatest tag team in wrestling. I think they're fun. I think they've capitalized on how to, they've capitalized on their popularity, I'll tell you that. They know how to play the popular game. They know how to appeal to their fan base. I'm just curious if their fan base will be gigantic, you know, or is it a limited in what they can do? I'm finding this very fascinating, though. The whole story is fascinating, and then all the talent, it's becoming like it's very having all the talent, people wanting certain people. Certain talents. The running joke is Nick Gage will be like the NBA. He'll be like the only him and he'll be like the only real indie draw because he can't work for any because he was not allowed to work for any of those other companies because of his background. But yeah, I would expect them to somehow do their best to get Phoenix and Pentagon in there under contract. I'm sure they'll be doing some dates for AEW. But I within a shadow of doubt, I think those two guys are definitely on their radar. And I'm just curious to see who pops up where.
Yeah, and you got Pentagon working three shows on Mania weekend that are all start at the same time. So it
Yeah.
just shows his level of being in demand, even if he doesn't end up following through on all three of those dates.
Yeah, I've already heard some of them were flipped, like, one of the high spots, him and his brother going early because Roosh fell out, which is another big story. Roosh signing the big contract for a Ring of Honor, where he just wrestles for Ring of Honor in the States and in the UK or whatever, and that the big mid-dream match, which I wanted to go to, we ended up. Me and Johnny P weren't able to make the logistics happen, so I'm glad I didn't get my ticket. But I wanted to see Park versus Rouge because it's like a one of them legendary feuds in Mexico. So where the only place you could see it live would be in Mexico, and here we're gonna get it WrestleMania weekend, but not anymore. Now we're getting Pentagon versus La Parca. Rouge will be doing something for Ring of Honor. That because of the contract just that blew up in Court Bauer's face, and I mean that was a big time matchup for Mania weekend.
Yeah, and the replacement is just not it's not there. But when
And
you
it'd be a
mention
good match if it wasn't replacing Roosh and Parka, you know?
right, and yeah, that's I mean, there was no option there. You couldn't think of a replacement that you
Nothing.
could
Nah. You
pull
know, like
off.
when Loki fell out of Riddle, which was kind of a dream match. Bringing in a Suzuki trumped it, you know.
Right.
There's just no way to trump the Rouge match. It's just not possible.
Yeah, because it's not just about the match, it's about the backstory and the history and everything. And then you talked about the importance. But so then the same concept, I mean, I don't know that anything has been announced yet, but with the Elite out of ROH and with what ROH is working on, they've got a WrestleMania show. You talk about needing to do something with Roosh, but if ROH for WrestleMania weekend show still has ties with New Japan, which I think everyone agrees that they will, is Tanahashi Okada anywhere near that level where it could be. Would you look at it as a comparison to LA Park versus Rouge, the same thing, having it happen in the States instead of you have to go to Japan for it or you have to go to Mexico for it? What do you think?
I think that'd be a competitive match, but MLW won't be able to pull it off. Ring of
No,
Honor
I'm
could.
saying Ring of Honor
Yeah.
pulling that off though, because it's just, I mean, what other big time matches can happen that can draw anything right now with everyone
Yeah.
locked up and so many people in places? And people have kind of talked about that being the big thing for ROH if they don't have the elite guys. It's like, does that match still work for them? And I think it does. I think it
I
could
do. I
be,
think so.
yeah.
I'd pay to see it.
Yeah, so that's an interesting kind of cards on the table situation. And with so many talent kind of switching around or being where they're going for full time and all of this interesting stuff, ROH has a cool stable they put together with Juice Robinson as the leader that everyone's kind of, went a little bit viral on the internet. But on the same vein, I mean, there's also a lot of people coming and going, which is a big thing about like kind of what I'll talk about when I talk about PWG is like the comings and the goings of indie wrestling right now is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I know it totally is, and like the whole seeing where who's gonna wind up where and when and how and when and with what ifs, it's what that's what made that's what made Monday Night War so exciting was you just never knew, especially in the early part. I mean, it stagnated out later on, and but for the first like man. 20 some odd weeks, 30 weeks. It was always exciting on seeing who the hell was gonna pop up. Like first, we saw Luger pop up on WCW TV on their opening Nitro. Then you saw Hall and Nash. You see Jeff Jarrett. I mean, and these guys, eventually the Radicals showing up on Raw. You always heard rumors, oh, Davey Boy Smith's coming to WCW, Bret Hart's leaving, there was all this stuff. And that's what made the Monday Night War so exciting was you just never knew who was going to show up. Oh, hey, it's X-Pac. Oh, hey, it's Ted DiBiase. It's, and that's what made it so exciting. And hopefully we can catch catch lightning in a bottle again like that, because that really blew up the wrestling with the Monday Night Wars, and it wasn't because they're putting on some of the greatest television of all time. It had nothing to do with that. It was seeing who was going to be wrestling where. Oh, hey, Ravishing Rick Rude showing up on both shows on the at the same same night. How's that possible? And so I'm hoping we can catch lightning in a bottle like that again. PWG, how was it, man?
Yeah, and you, I mean, you just talked about that, but there is the concept of brands over stars also. I mean, I think that it's been entrenched at this point that people think of the brands being bigger than the wrestlers and the stars, but I think AEW is showing that that's not true. You talked about how many fans do the Young Bucks bring. It's seemingly sizable enough that the elite and everything they built is enough to support a promotion. When I think we've all been brainwashed by WWE, or at least people my age and probably younger, to think that that's not how wrestling works just because that's how it's been presented. But PWG is a great example of that, I think, because this show didn't sell out. To me, there's no perceived difference in quality, but there is a lot of, I guess you would say, stars and names. They're gone, and so the show is not selling out, and it's not as packed, and it's not as in big of a building. But there's a lot of also the other side of it. That's kind of thing is there's comings and goings. There's people who are here, for the first time or second time, or looking like they were going to be a one-off, but now they're sticking around, or people who are, taking off soon. And in the first match, I got Brody King versus Jungle Boy. You got one guy who just signed to ROH. There was his match, I think in Bar Wrestling, or yeah, Bar Wrestling said it was going to be his last match on the Indies except for PWG. And that, who knows what that means other than if that means except for PWG moving forward or except for this specific PWG date that he already had and that he's actually done. So that's not sure. Then he's facing Jungle Boy, who's, everyone says, signed to AEW, right? So
Yep.
Did Jungle Boy show up here for PWG one time, or is AEW letting their guys still work PWG? Is everyone letting people still work PWG? It's a very weird situation. There was, you know, PWG had an ROH working relationship that was announced a while back, but that was because of guys like the guys who were in the Undisputed Era, basically, and the Young Bucks being in both companies, and with most of those people all gone. Does that working relationship legit? Is that on paper, or is that just something that was put out in a press release to say we're going to play nice for a while with these specific talent? Who knows? Good match. Jungle Boy looked fine, but not polished enough, honestly. He's good, but Brody, you know, there was some stuff that was sloppy, and I wouldn't put it 100% on Brody, but it's both guys. Brody can kind of be boring. He's got a lot of great look. He was a little boring here, though. Once he gets into the wrestling, I think sometimes the aggression isn't there all the way through, especially matches that go a little bit too long. This was nearly 15 minutes and probably could have been 10. Would have probably helped with a lot of stuff. They did some of the, like, you know, mortal sin of going back to a spot, like, in a convoluted, especially extra convoluted way, going right back to some one thing that you slipped on in the ropes, which is, like, I think one of the worst ways you can do that. That comes to play in later again when we talk about someone who's really turned it up and gotten better. Solid match, but, I mean, neither one of these guys could be coming back also is another part of it. So it's just, like, it's a weird, it was a good opener, I think, because it's two guys who are being presented as being from California. Couldn't be from further away points and bigger, you know, differences in background. They announced Jungle Boy as being from, I think, Valley Village in Southern California, which is like kind of very rich area. And Brody King being from Van Nuys, which is popular for being where they film all of the porno, basically. So these guys have totally different backgrounds. And so the crowd's going to be into it because they're both SoCal boys, but from different, totally different places. And like I said, decent, but not great. Puma King, DJZ. Good for a lucha match. Again, probably could have gone shorter. This goes about, you know, 15 minutes the same again. Probably could have been like 10. Puma's got great star power. DJZ looked fine, but didn't connect, I think, to the crowd as well as he could have. So it was fine. So it's like, first two matches, not terrible, but not amazing. And then that was kind of where I'm starting to think about the difference. I mean, there was like a lost generation of indie wrestlers who are finally now getting their shot in the big times with guys like Daniel Bryan. He's been in WWE for a while, but you got like AJ Styles, you know what I mean? And then now you got promotions snapping up people like Brian Cage and other like smaller level, you know, Roddy Strong. Like these guys who had been on the indies really helping hold together awesome work rate matches. And now they're all kind of gone. And what we've got now is not people who are bad, but they also they just haven't been wrestling as long. Some of them may have, but they're just not as good. And so you're getting matches that are like, I mean, fine, but it's not the level that PWG was when we had these guys who had been kind of, and it's better for their careers, had been stalled out in the indies, just being fucking awesome workers for a long time. Then, you know, they kind of shake that the next tag match, LAX, guys I've liked for a long time since they were EYFBO against Laredo Kid and Ray Horus, who are, Laredo Kid showed a good amount of personality, hit some cool spots. Ray Horus is tough for me because I think he's crisp. He's just about as good as anybody out there when it comes to the flying and the stuff that he does. But there's something that he lacks in personality that I think is just, it's just odd. It just doesn't come across in his matches. So he can pull off some really cool stuff, but I don't think that you get super invested in him. LAX, I thought, was really good here, and they looked great. I mean, they felt like big time. The match was super smooth. This was like, okay, this feels like PWG go go go. Follow up with that, we're kind of wondering, are they going to go to intermission, or are they going to wait? Because that felt like that tag match could have been the intermission main event, but didn't quite deliver to that level. So it was kind of like, well, maybe it is, and they just thought this was going to be bigger, but they did not, as they then come out with Jonathan Gresham versus Robbie Eagles, and this is where the show picks back up and feels like old PWG. These guys fucking killed it. Like, I know that Robbie was super excited to have this match. These guys haven't interacted with each other in wrestling in a long time. Gresham probably was just as excited, and they brought it. Gresham going after the arm. Robbie selling the arm was amazing. Then halfway through the match, Robbie starts going after Gresham's knee. Gresham sells that pretty well, but I think that my only issue with it is that Gresham was really connected on the arm the whole way through and really going for it with some really like interesting, unique, like offense. But then Robbie kind of goes after the leg a little bit, doesn't focus on it as much, but Gresham kind of sells it more and it plays into the finish more. So it kind of hurts that for me in the idea that, that like Gresham was just really focused. I mean, it's the arm versus the leg, so it kind of makes sense in a lot of ways, but it just felt like Gresham took a lot of the match and was focused more in his attack while Robbie wasn't, but somehow his offense that came later was more effective, overall. So I just kind of, that kind of hurt the story for me. But the match, other than that, was fantastic. I mean, really, really great stuff. I'd probably say, just based on live experience, like at least 3.5 to 3.75. I couldn't say that it was definitely in that range, but I would say that that's like the floor, just based on being there live. Next, you get the Rascals against the Best Friends. The Rascals really are comfortable. I could really feel that they've come into their own as characters. Their comfortability here, the personality jumps off the page when they're in the ring. I think that it just needs to get honed. Unfortunately, they're doing really terrible vignettes that are like knockoffs of that 70s show on TNA, so they don't get to show that same part of their personalities that I think could shine. Unfortunately, in TNA, where you would think that that's where they would do the better character work, but here, getting to work what's ostensibly a comedy match, but had a lot of really great action with the Best Friends. I think that you could think that the Best Friends would outshine them when it comes to personality and acting and performance, but they did not even slightly. Pet peeve, Desmond is doing some of that Tyler Bate style boxing that I talked about before, where it's too tight and too inside and doesn't really work in a wrestling setting. He did a lot of that here, so I get wanting to try to do something interesting and different, but it's not it. You know, I just personally don't think that looks great. Lots of cool, like I said, the personality stuff here, mixing in great spots, and the finish itself was fucking wild. Like it was kind of just like an upped version of their normal push moonsault that they do, but like just seeing it happen in real life and the way that they did it was fucking cool. The next match was probably my match of the night, I think, without any doubt, my match of the night, Bandido versus ACH. ACH is a national treasure. The man has become just a phenomenal wrestler. And coming into it, I think I kind of predicted he would play bully to Bandido. That was what I was expecting, especially because Quentin had reminded me of a match from early last year where ACH did that with Paco. So I kind of thought he'd do something similar here with Bandido, and he fucking knocked it out of the park. All the stuff that I've ever had issues with about ACH, the kind of cartooniness, Bugs Bunny stuff that I talk about, that camp, it worked so much better here with him playing disingenuous heel. The smiling and the waving and the little joking, but he's doing it in a way where he's mocking not just Bandido, but also the crowd. Another guy, insanely comfortable. I mean, he did not feel like he was on stage. He felt like he was just soaking it in and really enjoying himself. Bandido looked amazing, great spots. And then when Bandito's working over ACH, he's selling his ass off. The match completely takes a shift in tone as ACH chops the post and then sells his hand for the rest of the match. And I was just kind of like, ah, fuck, ACH's selling is so good that the crowd is kind of turning him back into a face because they're just into him because of his selling being right. So good. But then he goes into the Stone Cold spots, and then so the crowd is just losing their mind and chanting Stone Cold ACH, and everyone, he's 100% a babyface, and then he fucking saves the day for me as I'm like, God damn it, he babyfaced himself on accident, now the crowd loves him, and then he like played into it by doing Stone Cold, what an asshole, and then he sets up, gives the double birds, kick to the gut, and then Bandito's ready for the stunner. ACH stands up, gives the finger to the entire crowd, says, fuck all of you, doesn't do the stunner. And I'm like, oh my God, he completely prayed the crowd. He had the crowd. He went from everyone's excited that he's back, the crowd fucking hates him because he's being a dick, the crowd loves him again because he's the best seller on the planet, to then he's a fucking troll and a heel again in the same match. The guy is just a fucking star. I mean, he had this entire crowd eating out of the palm of his hand the whole way through. He changed people's emotions at the turn of a hat. He could just make you fucking go from loving him to hating him. It was amazing. A spot where his facial selling just floored me. ACH is selling the hand. They're both chopping each other back and forth, chop, 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 chop. So ACH had been selling the hand, but now he's fired up and he's chopping back and forth with Bandido. And then you see the moment where his face turns And the adrenaline wears off, and he's like, what the fuck am I doing? My hand is going to fall off. And so then he goes back to sell, and it's you could see every part of his thoughts in his face when that moment hit, where it was just like, oh my God, like, this guy's a fucking, you see it. Like, so many times people question, why would you be selling something so much? And then out of nowhere, you're just normal. And he put you through it emotionally because you watched him go from, he's selling the hand, he's fired up, he's doing it. And then it comes back and the adrenaline's gone. And oh my God, what did I do? My hand is fucked. They did a mirror spot that was like beautiful, because we've talked about it, guys who never wrestled each other, why are they doing mirror spots? But this, it made so much sense because they're similar size, similar, you know, styles, where they're flyers who can do heavyweight stuff. They both go for a big kick and then they lariat the shit out of each other at the same time, and that's it. But it was so perfect as a, like, these guys are equals, and it put them on the same playing field. I was just like, this match was amazing. ACH is so fucking good, dude. Like, I was just, I'm so impressed. And for me, I mean, coming from me, I think that that means a lot, because everyone knows I was not an ACH fan for a long time. And now it's just like, he has put it all together. That one, I mean, this match, I can't imagine that watching it on tape, it's going to be less than 4 stars. I mean, this was so good. Just an amazing performance by ACH. It's, I mean, I guess if all you care about is moves and spots, that said, I mean, this is where it happened. Someone, Bandito's going for something on the rope. He gets a little bit tripped up. He tries to catch himself and ACH just shoves him. So he crotches himself on the rope, and it was perfect because it's like, so it's more real, you know, it's just, that's what you would really do if the guy fucks up. So if you're someone who cares more about spots and flips than you do about that kind of storytelling and layered kind of access, I guess I could see you being low on it. But to me, the emotion, the way that ACH just showed that he's able to work a crowd to whatever, however he wants them to feel, was just like next worldly. I mean, I'm so happy I got to see ACH at least once more live now that, like, he's this good, because I mean, this was so impressive. Main events, two guys who are possibly leaving. Who knows? Trevor Lee versus Jeff Cobb. Oh, it was funny because post-match, it looked like they were trying to get ACH a mic, but he just ran off into the back and just took off. And I think he knew that it was Trevor's night. You know, even though ACH might not be coming back, Trevor was the guy that everyone was really came here to see off. This was phenomenal. It was almost a half hour long. They really brought it. The back and forth stuff was great. Trevor, just like, again, playing, he plays with the crowd's emotions here. The guy's just kind of, Trevor is working the shoulder from early on, and I could just tell that he was going to stay focused on it. And he did. It didn't play much into anything for the actual finish for him, but that's also because he's losing. But it was nice seeing him have that focus on the shoulder the whole way through. Yeah, just really great stuff. But it was, I would say, yeah, it wasn't as good as the ACH performance just because of ACH, like, by himself, but it was, I mean, it was not like very far off from the same quality. Trevor cuts a really emotional speech afterwards. Everyone sends him off, and the best part is Trevor's speech is, he's like, yeah, I didn't win the title, but you know what, I'm gonna probably get fired and I'll come back and win the title and everything then. So that was just a great way to send it off, with Trevor being, I mean, in tears but still having the sense of humor to kind of play with the crowd. Really great PWG show, a lot of different stuff. Like I said, maybe missing some star power, perceived star power to some people, maybe even missing a little bit of the quality, and that's why the show's wasn't sold out, but filled like a better overall wrestling show to me, honestly. And you got guys like Gresham hopefully coming back more, and so I'm looking forward to more PWG, especially if I'm able to get tickets easily and I don't have to be crammed in to the shows. I'll be even more excited to keep going to more PWG.
So overall, you liked it a lot then, huh?
Yeah, overall it was a great show.
All right. Anything else you want to hit on before we get into the shows?
No, let's get into it.
All right. We open up with NXT, and we pretty much open up with a Street Profits squash, which is fine, but what was the big deal was New Suns to attack him and get a 3-on-2 and beat him down. I liked the angle. That was a nice piece of business. Nothing, no flash or awe about it, but it was just, it worked. And I don't know. It felt like it maybe had a little racial overtones. They didn't play it up any racial at all. It felt kind of racial because one's like, you know, motorcycle gang. And the other group's an African-American group. But it definitely wasn't... It's just like, my question is, they made the angle about competition. It just, to me, why, to me, I always wonder, why are these two guys feuding? And the only thing I can come up with is they both want shots at the WWE, I mean, at the NXT belt. But I liked it. And all the racial overtones that I'm feeling is just like from wrestling in the past type of thing. What do you feel about the angle?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think anything of the racial side of stuff, and then I heard people kind of mentioning it around, and I guess I could see it just because they're a biker gang or whatever, but I didn't really feel like it was there. Yeah, I mean, the angle was good, the match was whatever. I feel like they wrestled the Metro Bros was like one of their first matches, so it's weird that they're back just jobbing again or whatever. But it also kind of feels like maybe they're redebuting a they're kind of redebuting the Street Profits. It does feel like this match had a little bit of what I was talking about, where like they could have a little bit more credibility and toughness now that they had their little jaunt on the indies. But we'll see if that crosses over into the promos. And it could work. I mean, if they're a little bit tougher coming out of a feud with the Forgotten Sons.
Yeah, and then we get Riddle and Lee together, and they have Matt Riddle cutting a promo. Don't let Lee talk, just stand to the side. It definitely clearly they definitely have a pecking order here, and Riddle looks like he's above Lee on the pecking order here, on status it seems. What do you think? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I definitely that. I think I didn't really like the excuse that Riddle is saying that he's not cleared to be ringside. I mean, I've never heard anything like that before in wrestling. You've had people come out to ringside that are in wheelchairs in the past, you know?
Right.
Like, wasn't that a fucking thing with John Laurinaitis on SmackDown? He was in like a hover round for a while or
Yeah.
something. Like, so it's kind of like, there's no implication that this is true. But it's being applied here just as an excuse to be able to have him, kind of do the save job in the angle of the match. So that hurt it a little bit for me, just for credibility. And yeah, clearly they're putting him above. And I think, to me personally, I think Keith Lee is the better promo of the two. So to me, it seems backwards to
Yeah.
have Keith cut the promo, you know?
Yeah, and clearly, I mean, and we'll get to it in the match. I mean, clearly Keith Lee is being used as a setup guy for this feud. And you know what? They have so many people on the roster. I get it. Some people are get lost in it. Some guys are getting better pushes than others. So I get it. I mean, Riddle's definitely a blue chipper. But I mean, I think Keith Lee has all the potential in the world too to be a mega star. But I mean, I like the dynamic of the Riddle Lee type thing where, Lee's coming to fight for his buddy. I mean, I like all that. But you just hate seeing Keith Lee just kind of wasted as like the setup guy. And you know what? The other thing about Keith Lee is all these other guys like Riddle, Cassius Ohno, they have been mega stars on the indie scene for at least 4 years plus, right? Now he still feels like he's not a, I'm not I don't want to say not accepted, but not as the hardcores aren't as enthralled with the super hardcores or the guys who do follow these guys into NXT and they have a big buzz about him. He had a buzz going in, don't get me wrong, but it's not, he doesn't have the pedigree like an Ohno had or Matt Riddle or a Adam Cole or a Ricochet. He doesn't have that cachet. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. He didn't get around as much as those guys did on the
Really think
indies.
about it. It might have been a year, maybe two, he started getting around, right?
And some places he may have had one or two matches. I think PWG was one of the only places that was really used him really regularly while he was at his kind of height of popularity on the indies and then Evolve. And that was really it. He wasn't showing up all over the place as much. So that's probably part of it.
Because
He
his
had a good showing
reaction
in.
just didn't doesn't seem like they're not treating him like a superstar, the crowd.
Right. And I think that I think that unfortunately defining him down is really not smart, because he's a guy that I think Riddle could actually take some losses. That's why it's odd that they're doing this feud with Hero where Riddle seems to win every match. Because I think that Riddle could take a loss easier than Keith Lee actually can, honestly. I think pushing Keith Lee as an undefeatable monster is smarter early on, and Riddle can build his way up and be believable. So I think they're doing it, honestly, completely backwards.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you, too. And the other thing is Keith Lee can play heel. He can be a heel. We just haven't seen that side of him, really, on the big screen. Then we get this Aleister Black promo. And this feels like it came from, like, from the Superstars of Wrestling from the 1980s, where it's like the promo's done backstage, it has all these special effects in it. I liked it for what it felt like to me, but is it because they don't trust him to do these promos in front of people? Do they feel they need to do the magic with him and do a lot of post-production stuff? Or what? What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's part of his aura, I think, his presentation. He's presented so larger than life with his entrance and everything that they do with him that maybe having him just stand in the ring talking hurts that kind of presentation a little bit. I could see that being part of it. Also, like you said, not talking, not being just speaking in front of a crowd, he's not strong at. So it could be a mix of both things. This promo to me was a little bit cheesy, but I can see where you're coming from as kind of a throwback that it works.
I mean, it was totally cheese. I mean, it felt like he was had a space background for crying out loud.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that it's terrible. I mean, much like the when he showed up on the video screen in the Ciampa angle a couple weeks back, I thought that worked really well. This kind of being the way that he's presented makes sense. And it's like, if you think about it, I mean, they do similar, and they will do similar stuff even on this episode with, like, Velveteen Dream. So it's not necessarily that it's only him. There's certain people that they do that with.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, they did it later with the Dream. And it worked for me more because I have that nostalgia where I love 80s, like, promos and stuff. So I have a place in my heart for it, where it might not necessarily work for everybody. I can definitely tell you that. Bianca Belair, I thought she had a good promo. But her promo felt very WWE-like, light even. It felt like something you'd hear Seth Rollins say, I'm the Kingslayer, or what have you. I'm defeated. What she was doing, I liked it, but it felt very, I don't know, I didn't feel like it was something someone naturally would say. It felt very scripted. I liked Baszler in the role here. I'm still not sold. I mean, I don't know. The horsewomen don't scream stars to me. I'm not, which is fine if that's what it is. They're okay in the role. Don't get me wrong. But I like, it's so weird. They're okay in the role. I like the dynamic, though. And I think it's something that and works for Baszler as a heel champion. Having the horsewomen come in and save her belt or act as the mercenaries to take out somebody. I enjoy all that. And I like Baszler showing ass here and trying to get Belair over. And they're even though I still think Bianca Belair might be the most... she doesn't scream babyface to me in the modern sense of wrestling, but she's the baby here. And to her fans, she's a super baby face. So in that sense, it might be working. I'm curious on what the reaction will be at the Takeover show, though, if the fans truly believe her as a superstar. What were your take on this?
I echo pretty much similar stuff. I thought Shayna was amazing. I do think that, unfortunately, kind of throwing the Four Horsemen on her, and they really felt tacked on and just overshadowed by her, unfortunately. It's not just that they don't scream star. I think that also they're in a bad place because they're being compared to what's quickly becoming the ace of NXT in Shayna Baszler. I mean, she is just so good at all of her matches deliver, her promos, again, like here, her promo delivers, she pops off the screen. So it's kind of tough to then be stuck with her and think that you're going to stand out in any way. Bianca was good, but she's not a great face promo. So
Yeah.
she delivered everything well. I'm with you that it doesn't feel realistic, but it also doesn't feel insanely forced like some people do, especially when they're given bad WWE speak, which I think is a good way to put it here when you talked about it
Yeah,
being kind of
that's a good
WWE.
term, Tim, and you hit it right on the head there.
Yeah, so she did an okay job salvaging bad WWE speak for someone who's not a natural baby face. So it's like a really, she was really hampered in a lot of ways, and that's by someone who's, for all intents and purposes, very green. And then going up against what could probably be the best promo in NXT. I mean, from week to week, there might be some people there who have better talent, but they don't get as much of a chance as she does. And her kind of mix of the level of quality that she delivers as a promo plus the amount of time that they focus on her. I think that Shayna's the most solid promo that they have right now. So that hurts Bianca as well, being compared to it, just like it hurts the Four Horsewomen being compared to it. I mean, you know, it's just she's that may be something that turns up being an issue with Shayna, is that it's like really hard for her to work in a way that doesn't overshadow people around her. And I talked about it in the past, but with Ronda looming in the near distant future, it
Yeah.
could something similar could happen. So, but I thought that it worked for getting me excited because I was wondering what their interactions were going to be like when this feud was clearly being put on the table. And I thought that they here it was like a nice way to see it. It wasn't disappointing, but it wasn't everything that it could have been.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever heard how I want to book Shayna and Ronda?
No, I don't think you've
I've
mentioned it.
always wanted them to do kind of like the Sting Luger 1996 relationship where Shayna's a baby face with Ronda, but behind her back she's a heel. So like she'll be high five the fans when Ronda's looking, but you know give them the finger when they're not, and eventually it leads to Ronda, Ronda either the payoff is Ronda gets eliminated in the Rumble by Shayna because of that. Or Ronda catches her at the Rumble and leads to a Mania match, but that's my fantasy booking.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, that's just like a lot of blueprints there. I mean, it's not very storyline depth out, but it's just it was just my on I just on the fly blueprint talking. Then we have the man with the most hard name to say in wrestling, Donovan whatever now. Most of the times, the WWE cleans up the name for the better and make it easier for people. This is not the case here. The announcers are having a terrible time with it, and I particularly didn't care for the match. At one point, they sold this missed elbow that missed by a mile. I don't know. I just don't. I don't know what to say. What do you think? What's your take here?
Yeah, right. This is with a name like Dijakovic, it must taste great, right? This is like, what the fuck were they thinking? The match itself I liked, but they were not super comfortable with each other,
Yes.
which is kind of the issue. But I liked it in theory, and I heard some people complaining about it as, you know, it should have been a more clean squash for Dijakovic. But to me, I think it actually is good to have some competitive matches, especially with someone who you could have something with in the Adrian Jaoud. I think Jaoud actually does have something that they could get out of him. So having just a competitive
I
fight.
agree with you there with that too.
Yeah, I think that having a good fight and a struggle between the two, where Dijakovic looks convincingly the better, but didn't just steamroll him, was actually good. Me personally. Now, the issue, like you said, stuff that's mistimed, stuff that's very obviously way far off from the mark, just a little bit of sloppiness. But, you know, some people like that. There's certain people who, you know, a match will get a higher rating because of some stuff looking a little bit you know, like it's more of a struggle. I don't necessarily think that this match did it in a good way, but some people can't see the difference. One match, I hate to put this on blast, but I watched the Nick Gage versus David Arquette match under the guise of it being good. And I think that people like it because it had a shoot aspect to it at the end. But for me, it just made it look bad. And sometimes that's how it can be, I think. I'm not saying this is as bad as that, honestly, or that it was even like a shoot. But I think that some people get blinded by any kind of realistic struggle, as then that means that the match was good. And that's not necessarily the situation here.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Then we get this War Raiders vignette. This felt kind of cheesy here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think that the steel chairs with the Undisputed Era logos printed on them could get any cheesier, but the War Raiders were like, hold my beer. Because they, what the fuck was this?
They must have stolen them for War Games.
So they steal the chairs, but then they do like a burning ritual with steel chairs. Like, what the fuck is this? This is so bad. This is
so 80s corny shit, honestly. This is supposed to be the team that is like an ass kicking, don't take names or prisoners. And they turn them to this. I mean, fuck.
They're like a step away from LARPing. I mean, they're basically LARPing. They're like, what the fuck is this?
It pretty much is. It's like, okay, it's like, I'm looking at them and I'm going, phonies. It's beyond terrible. They should be ashamed of themselves if they want to be top draws. Yeah, they're fucking geek LARPers. Unfucking believable.
Yeah.
Oh god. I don't. Yeah. Anything else you want to say about it?
Nope. That's it.
Johnny Gargano, Castillo here versus Castillo. I thought this was a great sub 6-minute match. I'll tell you that much. Gargano again is just fantastic of taking a piece of talent, making him shine, making him look good, and then they slip on the banana peel and lose. I love this match. It's a classic textbook one of wrestling. Throughout the ages, we've seen it time and time and time again, and the good workers know how to pull it off and make it come out smelling like a rose. The bad workers fumble it and then make it look terrible. And Gargano made it look magic. And both guys get elevated out of the match. What do you think?
It shows a smartness. We kind of, I think everyone questioned and disliked the kind of tweener situation with Gargano. The way that he's interacting with Ciampa. But this, I think, really shows why it has to be, because he does not wrestle like a heel here, but it works for what he's doing. So that's kind of the necessity.
It's totally against his character. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm just curious. I'm curious if they have Ciampa and then you have Gargano having taking Ricochet's belt, and then they officially reconcile at the pay-per-view. That's what I'm afraid is going to happen.
Right.
That's my worst case scenario booking there. And then the internet throws up in their mouths.
So it's like he does a lot of the same stuff he would do as a babyface, but just a little bit slower.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's like the heel version. But yeah, and this is, I mean, I talked about it with the Dijakovic versus Jaoud match. It's like, I like the concept, and this is when it's executed properly. With it being
Gargano was a true babyface in the situation.
Right, exactly. So it's a lot less, a lot more competitive and a lot less of just a pure squash match, and it helps get over someone who Carrillo could be something. I think Carrillo.
I think he's going to be on. I think they moved him to 205. So
yeah, and we'll see if he stays there. It wouldn't be bad. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad place for him. At least for now.
You know what? And it would have been better if they did this match and then Gargano wins with a heel move.
Right, exactly.
It would have made it even sweeter and it would have worked on that side of it, too. Then we got a Ciampa promo. What do you think of this?
I mean, good. Not great. And Ciampa's getting a little bit repetitive with what he's doing.
Yep.
So it's just, it's a bummer. I need him to get moved on to doing something new so that he can be interesting.
Exactly. And then we get the main event, Keith Lee.
Oh, you skipped over the we mentioned it earlier, but just real quick, I wanted to mention the Dream video talking about earlier.
Oh, that's right.
But,
I'm so sorry. You're but this look, right. Yeah, but the this Velveteen Dream video, which was again, it's like the second one in a row they've done with him like that, or maybe third. And it's been fantastic each time. What do you think?
Yeah, it's fantastic, but this felt like it was a commercial for, you know, the Dream should be on the main roster. That was like what all this ad felt like it really was just, I am ready for the main roster. Like, yeah. It was a commercial for that more than it was for him in NXT.
Yeah, it's almost like, it almost felt like something you turn in for a job interview.
Yeah, exactly.
And singing all your praises and showing everything you've done well. Okay, hey, I can talk. Ooh, hey, look at all these great matches. Whoop. Hey, look at all these superstars think of me. I mean, it's very well produced, too. I mean, God, he's a stud.
Yeah.
It's just nuts that he's, I don't want to say just treading water in NXT. It's just like, you know, he's, I feel like he's just waiting his turn for the call up. Because, I mean, you can't put the belt on him. Yeah, you know. So it's just like, come on, do something with him.
Yes, exactly.
And then we get Keith Lee versus Matt Riddle.
Cassius Ohno.
I mean, Cassius Ohno, I'm sorry. And, you know, Riddle can't be down there because of his injury. So we get this one-on-one match. What was your thinking process on this? What were you thinking?
I thought that Keith looked really good. Dominant, obviously. The crowd, like you talked about, not into him as much as they could have been. I really liked Hero, you know, working heel here, kind of bobbing and weaving and taking his shots. Heard some people complaining about the finish. I personally thought the finish was fine.
So same here, I liked it.
Yeah, I thought I heard, and you know, so I won't take credit. Like I remembered this, because I'm not Quentin. You know, I don't remember every little detail of stories from 5 years ago and all this. But the Hideo Itami Cassius Ohno feud involved low blows and stuff, you know, and then now Chris Hero's doing it, so that's a
right,
nice
and I loved it because of I mean, honestly, I didn't remember it from the matches, but I do like the fact that the announcers mentioned it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was good, and then the referee, yeah, getting the referee out of place to set it up and everything that they did. So I thought that was done really well. I'm with you that I think that, you know, or I don't know that you said it, but just reiterating kind of what I said earlier, but Keith Lee being presented this way, even if he is, you know, does take a low blow to lose, it's weird to me that they feel the need to protect Riddle more than Keith when it comes to wins and losses, just because of, like I said, the kind of style of wrestler that they are. I feel like,
yeah, honestly, and you know, and like I don't mind if they were gonna have Matt Riddle and his buddy, and his buddy was gonna lose to Ohno to further the storyline. I have no problem with that, except that I don't think his buddy should be Keith Lee. It needed to be someone lower on the totem pole, someone he's friends with, you know. You know, hell, they could have used Punishment Martinez in the role.
And he's also larger, but it would have been more believable.
Yeah, it just I think like Lee has, I'm not saying Punishment doesn't right now, but Lee, I mean, I don't know. I think Lee has a lot of upside. And they better pull the trigger on him because he's going to be running out of hair dye soon. And the grays, he definitely looks much better when he's on TV when they make him put the hair dye on. Maybe they think he's too old and maybe this is the role for him. I don't know. It just feels like feels like Keith Lee is too good as the setup guy role is what I just think.
Yeah, and you talk about it, but too old. I mean, if you think Keith Lee's too old, then they shouldn't have signed him because he's not. This is not his place. He hasn't had the career and is ready to just. He's not Chris Hero, you know. He's not ready to retire in NXT. You should be letting him work. But if they want to, I guess if they want to pay him just to finish out his career doing nothing as the setup guy, I don't know why you would want to do that. Yeah. But
I don't know either. So we'll see where it goes from here. Sounds like, you know, eventually we'll probably see Lee Riddle feud eventually, 6 months down the road. But we'll see. Overall, I enjoyed the show. I mean, I think it flew by and it delivered. And I didn't think the wrestling was great by any stretch, but I thought Ono and Lee was good. I thought Gargano was good. The Dijak thing was okay. And then I thought the angles paid off that we got. So I thought overall it was good storyline progression.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, before we get into our review of NXT UK TakeOver, why don't you check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features, and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at the Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present, check all this out and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. There we go. Oh my god, I'm never gonna get rid of this cough. Oh god,
it's like Meltzer from a couple years ago.
I should start smoking. Yeah, if I'm gonna have this cough, I mean Jesus. NXT UK TakeOver. This is very interesting. I feel the main event has gotten panned pretty badly. I didn't think it was that bad, but I still think it might be the worst NXT TakeOver main event they've had. I thought the crowd was really hot for everything. But it felt like, you know, it didn't feel like a can't miss show, the other takeovers have been. Where are you feeling on? What are you feeling overall on the show?
The crowd was hot but annoying, I'll say.
Yeah.
The main event, I think I heard some people say that the main event has been divisive more than just people all shitting on it, so I think that there's been a mix of positive reviews as well. You may have just missed them based on kind of who you interact with, but I think that there are people who thought that it was good. Some people are even talking about match of the year, I think I've heard, possibly.
Wow.
It is early in the year, obviously, but there's people who are into it. I think the only match for me that really delivered was the opening tag,
agree, and we'll get into it, and it still felt a little too long to me.
Yeah, and had some other issues, I think, but was not bad. You know, not terrible, but yeah, I mean, yeah, for it shouldn't have been called a takeover, honestly. It didn't feel like it was on the level. They should have came up with their own term for NXT.
Yeah.
You know, in the UK, but this is what we got. So now the brand is watered down. So now when the, you know, US takeovers start to slump, people won't. I guess it protects that in some ways, because if the US takeovers slump down, but you still will like compare them to this and say that they're better than this rather than saying that they're bad takeovers or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. This is not a good sign for what this means for the future of them continuing to branch out with developmental territories all over the planet, just because this is not... TakeOver has been good, but it's not to the same level. Or, I mean, NXT UK has been good, but it's not to the same level, you know?
And, you know, there's enough talent where, you know, yeah, I know it's based in the UK, but you can bring in guys and have them do a six-month run over there. Like, you know, Donovan Dijak, who hasn't been doing anything, or Keith Lee, who hasn't been doing anything. You can bring him over there for 6 months and have him do some programs, you know? And I don't think that's insulting. Or will it make it a less than a UK brand? I don't care. As to me, as long as it's mostly UK, I have no problem bringing other. I don't have no problem bringing Americans over or Japanese over or this or that over to make the brand deeper or more exciting. Because right now, again, we've talked about it. They have a couple hot acts, and that's about it. And then they have a bunch of guys who it almost feels kind of weird, like Travis Banks. I thought he was going to be the guy who was going to have to make or break the pay-per-view, and well, they didn't even let him work on the pay-per-view for the most part. They gave his position up to Finn Balor. Was it because he had a legit injury? I heard he was healthy, and this was a call by the office for a treat for the fans to have Finn Balor work. And I think that does nothing, doesn't help anybody. And you're trying to grill this to grow this talent. I don't think it helped Devlin, and it didn't help Banks, you know.
Yeah.
And don't allow Banks and Devlin to have that show stealer, which I thought they had the potential to do. They never were going to be able to do it with Finn because of the roles they were in, and student versus teacher. It just wasn't going to happen. So, I mean, yeah. I just think that they have some really strong talents, but I don't think it'd be wrong if, you know, you use some more of the guys who are over, but you're not really using a lot on NXT. Cassius Ohno could be another guy coming over there on a more regular basis. But hey, let's get into it, I
Well,
guess.
yeah, I mean that it misses the point, and I mean you could say something as cavalier as, you know, Japanese and British wrestlers have been in, you know, UK and America in the past, and that's acceptable. But also like that the UK scene grew with a lot of import talent coming in and being part of the scene. It wasn't all UK guys. It was a big deal when Progress started that they were like the only company in the UK that wasn't using imports to draw
Yeah.
shows. And that became a big deal, but then they also started getting to the point where they used a lot of imports too. So, you know, it's just kind of it you're right. You can freshen it up. It could still be its own brand, and it can be NXT UK and have people who fit in. I mean, there's guys like David Starr now who are full-time in the UK and he's American, you know? Like
Yeah.
there are people who are part of that scene that are not British born.
I totally agree. Well, we open up with Mustache Mountain versus Drake and Gibson. I thought letting Drake and Gibson win the belts first, I thought was a smart move. Because honestly, Mustache Mountain and Dunn are your most over guys. And then I'd have to say Gibson is the next over act. So they, I think, and I think Drake needed the rub. Giving them the belts is good. Giving them heels, let Mustache Mountain chase them for a bit. So I like that. I loved Mustache Mountain in the British Bulldog gear. I thought they most. I thought they made Trent Seven even look like a professional wrestler. So the gear, the British Bulldog's gear with the Mustache Mountain stuff, just I thought that the gear ruled. I thought the match was super heated. I'm glad we see Gibson and Drake having matching gear too. I like tag teams who you know wear the same stuff. I thought Mustache Mountain Shine was a lot of fun. The blind tag didn't set up to the tag, but they set up the heat, but they do eventually set up the heat with the old Tully and Arn on the floor spot, or you could call it the American Dragon, Red Dragon spot they used to do. Gibson Drake getting the heat. Love their double team spots. The fucked up accidental tag spot was weird in the match. I don't know how I feel about that. It like I didn't think it was necessary, and it didn't. I think it hurt the match a little bit. Hot tag for Bate was nuts. Bate's double airplane spin was cool. I felt they should have kept this in the 18-minute range. I think they went 25 plus. Drake's 450 is way too above a babyface move. If he's going to do it, they need to do some really dirty double cheating heat to set it up. Makes sense to break Drake's Shankly gate since Gibson's is the master of the move. So it was smart to break when they both had him in the Shankly gate. So that made sense. I overall really enjoyed it, 3 3/4, but it felt like it didn't need to go this long at all. What were your thoughts, Tim?
Very similar. I think that you talk about Drake's babyface stuff. I think that they do a good job that Drake does everything that's flashy and high pace for his team, and Gibson kind of stays pure heel. So I think that works in that regard. But I could see Drake dropping some of that stuff that's like high pace actions that's not so babyface if he's going to be a heel. It just, I
Or
mean, this
just
is.
set it up differently, that's all.
It's all part of the same thing that just that, you know, Gibson is a much stronger heel than Drake is
Yeah.
overall. Biggest issues, I mean, not a huge issue, but it is very formulaic. It's like, the Mustache Mountain is basically becoming like the New Age Outlaws, where it's like you always know who's going to take the heat and who's going to get the
Yeah.
hot tag. And it's like, I mean, that it makes sense because of their dynamics. Bate looks great in the gear. They both look great in the gear, like you talked about. Biggest issue with the match, why does Trent Seven always take the heat? Because he's a really good underdog, face in peril.
I
But
sure hell don't want to see his comeback either.
that as well. But the other part of it too is that you can say that about him, but then he's bleeding out of the back of his head. He's laying in the mat, writhing in pain, and the crowd again would rather talk about their shoes. And they're not really invested in the underdog face in peril who's bleeding. You know what I mean? So that hurts the
Yeah,
match to
you
me.
know, sometimes the UK crowd, and not just UK crowd, but they're known for their chants. You think they're
Exactly.
more concerned about coming up with witty chants and trying to seem like a hot crowd than actually being a hot crowd?
Exactly. So to me, when you got a baby face who's selling his ass off and he's bleeding out of the back of his head, you would think the crowd would be emotionally invested in him getting his ass kicked. So that hurts
Yeah.
the match for me. The Doomsday suicide dive on the floor was pretty cool the way it was set up and the way it pulled off. But again, there's so much double teaming, and Bate is becoming really bad about this, where there's a lot of double teaming, and I think it works for the heels here, but he just looks like he just stands there while the other team does double teams and beats up his partner, and he just stands in his corner, and it hurts that kind of believability. I give the match 2 1/4 or 3 1/4. Really good stuff. Great opener, but it was it had some flaws that I kind of talked about there.
Then we get this angle where Devlin attacks Banks, and there's an injury angle with Banks, and they start off to have a match, but they take Banks out on a stretcher or whatever, and he gets replaced by Finn Balor, and so we get Finn Balor versus Jordan Devlin. What's your thought process here, Tim?
It's just, it really shows, like, I'm completely here for Devlin ending up being the bigger star in the WWE, honestly, or just having the better career in the WWE, because it's coming together here. He comes out, he's a fucking great heel. The attack on Banks is awesome. I talked about the gear last time we were reviewing the black pants and how it was, for me, it was tough because it felt like it was still the heel gear, even though it was new and looked good. But he's got this gear is blue and baby face, so it worked. And that's kind of stupid, but it worked for me. And then Balor comes out and he's just hitting his poses, and it's like, I don't know, I just don't see the personality of a wrestler from Balor. He's in great shape. He seems like he's very happy to be there, but
Seems
he
like a
didn't.
nice guy.
Yeah, but he didn't feel like a big time star who's an athlete
Yeah.
in a fight. And Devlin did the whole time. He's really selling it. I thought Devlin's selling was awesome. His spots were great, but it's like he should have been a lot more dominant, especially with the way that he's been presented on NXT UK. I mean, this really felt like you dialed him back a lot. He was acting as if like he was lucky to get any spots on Balor, primarily throughout like the whole match. Felt like Balor took way too much of it. When Devlin does get in control, again, like I said, I thought a lot of his offense looked really good. He looked really rough and just kicking the shit out of Devlin on the mat, but it's so short-lived. God damn it, this is so tough. Balor and Devlin, I get their names mixed up a bunch. But yeah, so good stuff. I gave it 3 stars. I liked the action, but there's just... I don't know. I mean, Finn Balor, I feel so bad because I think I'm not completely in the camp of like they're wasting him on the main roster because I don't know how high his ceiling really is. But I do feel like he leans into like being just like WWE Universe. I'm so happy to be here. And I just don't get any realness from him in a WWE setting, not even in this situation where you would think he would have been allowed to kind of take the training wheels off and do whatever he wanted, especially in a match where he could have really helped to make someone who, you know, theoretically you think he would care about and his number one kind of protege and the student that they link to him the most. You think he'd want to make him look good just so it's like a sign of, even if you did it selfishly, so it's like a sign of him being a good teacher, you would think he would work harder right to make Devlin look really good, you know, coming out of this.
Yeah, I give it 3.25. I'm with you. I don't get the Finn Balor love. I never thought he had great psychology. I always thought he looked good. I think he's better in a tag team than he is in a singles run. Because you can do the heat. I mean, do the hot tag where he comes in and kicks ass. But I will say, I mean, maybe I'm missing something because he blew the roof off the place. We see Balor in control early. I love the kick of the ropes to create Balor gets up to set up the heat. Devlin working over Balor and now mocking him. You know, we get this teacher-student dynamic. It's okay. 3.25. It wasn't like blow away or anything. But, you know, yeah, it felt like, you know, you don't want to... You really didn't want Devlin losing on his first pay-per-view, and that's what happens. Yeah, in their mind, oh, but he's wrestling Finn Balor. That's got a huge rub. Grand scheme of things, he's still lost. And this almost felt like Smoky Mountain Wrestling, where Finn Balor is treated like when The Undertaker would show up at Smoky Mountain Wrestling. The Undertaker is a star. Dirty White Boy / Jordan Devlin is not. And that's what it kind of felt like here.
I think that it could have been fine. He could have lost, but in a different match. I just think he wasn't even made to look good, let alone like that he lost, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, to me the match is all about Finn.
Yeah, completely.
Eddie Dennis, Dave Mastiff, no DQ. I give it 1 star and 3/4.
Okay.
Didn't like it. A lot of furniture moving. There's weapons. More furniture moving. I didn't believe these guys hated each other. Yeah, it didn't work for me. What about you? What do you think?
I thought maybe I was being too harsh, but I gave it 1.5 stars. I think that these guys did not deliver.
Show, right?
Yeah, they did not deliver on the setup at all. I was excited for it being no DQ because I thought that the stip would just be that it's going to be a fight. But of course, it's WWE, so it has to be a plunder match. You know, that's the way that the gimmick match works, is they always have to then use some kind of weapons. And they didn't. Yep. This story didn't base around the idea that these guys used any weapons, so it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I'm sorry, but to me, if you're going to set up an angle where you're going to use weapons and stuff, then you need to tease or even use it a little bit in other settings, and they didn't. It was all about this being just a fight. So I thought, okay, it's a fight with no rules. That means that they can go crazy, but that doesn't mean that they need to use plunder, but they do. The table setup was so fucking, like, instantly knew. The second the table was in the corner, I'm just like, cannonball into the corner, that's the finish. And it's just so predictable and boring and Yeah, this was not good. And I was honestly, I think I was high on this compared to a lot of people going in. I thought that this could be good because I thought that the build worked and I thought that both guys do have something there. But then they just deliver what feels like a paint by numbers kind of trying to recreate, like fine art pieces or something being done by kids, because it has to be in the same vein as a WWE style plunder match, but it's turned all the way down and just nothing to it.
Yep. Rhea Ripley defending her title versus Toni Storm. How do you rate this one, Tim?
2 3/4. I thought Rhea looked really good as a monster heel,
Too
but
early to take the title off, or you feel?
definitely think that she
Yeah.
took the title off her too soon. And I also think that, I mean, this kind of. I think that I could see why people would think that this is counteracting that, but I think that Rhea looked a little bit, not out of her element, but just like she's still kind of a little basic. I mean, all of her offense is real simple. She doesn't have a lot. But I think that the
And does
reason
she really
why,
need that right now?
exactly, that's what I was going to say. And that's why I think that keeping the belt on her would have been the good move, is because she doesn't need to do a bunch, but she makes everything look good and you buy into it with her character. She looks like she's kicking ass the whole time. And so I think that having her develop with the title would have worked because you can have her break out new stuff and start doing a little bit more and more here and there so that you can build to. And now I think that you've kind of shit the bed on that. Again, Toni selling good, but Toni selling is not always her strongest suit. I think that there's sometimes where she really hits and sometimes where she doesn't. And unfortunately, this was a time where she didn't quite. And I think she really needed to help put over what Rhea is doing. She needed to be the kinetic energy to make it bigger and make it more, you need to get you more invested in it. The crowd was super into her. Obviously, I think a little bit of that is because of what's going on in real life around
Yeah.
this time. So whatever. It works, it works. I think in a lot of ways I could see this being an audible, really, because I think that they may have wanted to send a message that they're going to support their stars no matter what happens
What? Yeah.
to them. If people are attacking them on social media, that doesn't mean that they're going to just turn their back on them. So I could see that of being why they did it, because they might have thought that it may look like they're running away from controversy by just having her lose here. And that may have been why they did it, or maybe it was the plan the whole time. Either way, I think it was the wrong decision, honestly. But what are you gonna do?
Yep, I went 3 1/4. My first note is, why the hell is Ripley running away from Toni Storm? Isn't Ripley the ass kicker? Ass kickers don't run away early in the match. But now eventually it flips and Ripley's using her size. Ripley's stomping on Mudhole and Storm. I love Ripley using the Kevin Von Erich body scissor. Storm is really good selling the back. I really love Ripley where she has Storm in control and nails her with multiple clotheslines. I dug that. Yeah, I think they pulled the trigger, and I think Storm, I think Ripley needed a good run here. I think she, from what we saw in the early television, I feel like she's earned her spot and gives a different aura that we don't necessarily see. She felt like she could have developed into like a Jordynne Grace like worker. She's obviously not there yet because Jordynne Grace is incredible and fantastic. But I felt like Ripley had that type of upside to it. And I'm not saying because she's losing the title, we're not gonna ever see it, but it's just not the same. You need to protect the aura of the ass kicker. And when you ever lose that, you get a dent to that aura, so that might hurt long run. Pete Dunne, Joe Coffey. I give it 2.5. And a lot of it was because the crowd was into it. Pretty basic match where there's just a lot of. To me, it's like almost my least favorite style, where it's just like a bunch of spamming kickouts, and that's what we got here. I didn't feel Coffee was ready for the spot. He seemed a little blown up at times. I felt Dunn tried his best and worked really hard here. And I thought both guys worked really hard. But I don't feel Coffee was at that level, was at Dunn's level. And the fact that they tried to book 34 minutes with a Joe Coffee, I'd have to question the person's sanity on why would they think that's a good idea. And it's kind of, and you're exposing your, and you're exposing your headliner, your, you know, your gimmick headliner, your guy who you're banking all in to be the lead heel group. And here you go, you're going 34 minutes, and he kind of felt like he fell on his face here, and it didn't work. And I mean, they tried hard. I thought Dunn did a really good, admirable job of carrying him, but I just didn't think it was good wrestling whatsoever. Not terrible, because the crowd was into it, and I can see a certain people really liking all the kickouts and stuff. That's not my style, and I feel it's also a kind of lazy style where you don't have to be creative to do this match. You just have to have decent timing. With that said, what do you think, Tim?
Very similar to kind of your take. Should have been shorter. There is kind of the arguments and stuff about Dunn. He has adapted a lot of stuff that's reminiscent of like Zack Sabre Jr. And you see it in here, but then he also takes like similar style and kind of does it his own way. So early on, he's riding around on Coffee, who's holding him up, and he's kind of going for the arm work, which is like very much Zack Sabre Jr. tropes.
Oh,
but then
Zack, yeah.
Yeah, but then turns around later and he's in a bear hug and does like tweaking the nose and headbutts, which is not Zack, you know, so that's more bruiserweight. But then you go, why the fuck is
Finley.
Yeah, but exactly. And that's kind of my comparison when people, and I mean, I talked about it on Psychology is Dead, you know, when we did the top 50. Like, yep. The difference is he wrestles more like Finley and Regal, and that's why they like him more than Zack Sabre Jr., right? But yeah. At the same time, why is your babyface star of the brand tweaking someone's nose? You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's not a babyface move.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of bullshit, you know. I know.
Yeah, I think it's because they say, "Oh, that's British style, though."
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's acceptable.
Or in their mind, that's what British style is about.
Yeah, exactly. So it hurts. I think that it's tough too because I don't think anybody in the crowd, no matter how much they're into it, I don't think anybody bought that Coffee's going to win the title here. I just really don't.
No way.
And I think that that's another part of what makes this a down main event for a NXT TakeOver, because I don't think that I can't think of another TakeOver where the main event was that clear that someone's not going to win the title. You know what I mean? I think that there's always some doubt. I think that that's the cool thing about TakeOver is that you always believe that it's possible because it's a big match on a big show that a title change could happen. So, I mean, you just had the women's title change right before, plus Coffee doesn't feel like he's presented as someone who could win. I think that nobody expects that Coffee's going to win the title here, you know?
No, I mean, I will say they've done a good job of promoting Gallus or whatever they're called.
Right.
But you know, but still, it was all smoke and mirrors. They're not ready. They weren't ready for that push in that position. Right.
And I mean, that's part of the weird thing, too, is it feels like Gallus is going to be de-emphasized, but they don't necessarily have to be completely. So you've got the tag team that could be presented as the, you know, an upper tag team. Then you've got the European Union on the next episode of the TV have a big match where they seem like they're getting presented. And then you talked about it in the first match where it made sense for, you know, Gibson and Drake to win the titles. But you've also got two big baby or heel challengers, and you've got no babyface challengers for the tag titles. So, you know, then Coffee here loses and feels like he's gone, only to then be completely upstaged instantly after the match by Walter, to the point where it does feel like he's just a complete afterthought to that.
Oh, yeah, isn't it? It's like, hey, here's our bigger, better version of Coffee.
Exactly. So it's just like, it feels like even if you were going to have babyface tag team champions, it feels like you have a better heel team ready in the European Union to challenge than Gallus, and then now you've also got, you know, Walter is going to challenge over Coffee again for the title. So it just feels like, god damn, like, were you guys really rushing this Gallus thing just for this because you didn't have anybody else that you wanted to just feed to Pete Dunne for the first one? And again, it just talks about like poor planning on that part, because they should have had a big match here for Dunne instead of it being a setup. Crowd gets into it, but yes, lots of kickouts, lots of, back and forth that just feels so forced. I couldn't tell, but it looked kind of like Pete Dunne has a like leopard print on the side of his singlet, and then he also kind of did some a move that I think could be reminiscent of the pounce. So I wonder if Pete Dunne's been watching his Monty Brown tapes, or I guess more what would be a Marcus Corvan from ECW, and he's picking up some of that stuff. But I thought that that was kind of funny. But yeah, I gave it 2.5 also. Powerbomb on the apron was nutty, but that's kind of that doesn't make a match. It's just a cool little thing.
Exactly.
Crowd's into Pete Dunne for sure, and he's crying with the belt post match, basically almost or coming across like he's getting emotional. But yeah, I mean, I didn't personally, I didn't get super invested in it, and I'm bummed out too because I'm like, clearly Walter's the next challenger, so that means there's no fucking way Dunn is going heel anytime soon. Really, it doesn't feel like it. So I was just hoping to get the, I guess maybe they could do it, put the belt on Walter, but I don't feel like they do just because of the way that his contract is kind of set up. And then you got Devlin, who doesn't look like a credible threat now. So I'm just like, God, where do they go next? What are we gonna do? Because I hate to say it because I was a Pete fan for so long, but they just need to get this belt off of Pete, even just for the fact that then they could change him, they could turn him heel, because I just think that they aren't gonna let him be a heel champion. They want him to be a babyface, and it just
Yeah,
kind
they
of
almost albatrossed him.
Yeah, it's to the point now where it's just like,
And
God, another.
he's a better heel than a baby face.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, there's just no question about that. I think everyone agrees. And it's just, yeah. Yeah. So,
What'd you do to the show? I'm giving it a thumbs in the middle.
yeah, thumbs in the middle. Honestly, I could go even go thumbs down
Okay.
realistically. Just because every match felt like it was too long. Nothing felt super important, and the only thing that did feel like it happened, that could be like something to talk about feels like it was the wrong choice with the women's title. I guess you could say the first tag team champions is important, but that's the opening match. So it's just like, it feels like you really have a good opener and then everything goes downhill. Not
Yeah.
necessarily in quality, but in importance for sure.
For sure. Now you saw the NXT television UK. What other matches aired?
So they had an El Ligero versus Muscle Cat. What the fuck is that guy's name? H Saxon Huxley match that was decent. Just to put some, it was clearly just to put some steam back on Ligero after having him job to Coffee. Probably smart because he's a good jobber to the stars level guy for
Yeah.
them. Get Jenny versus Isla Dawn. Felt like Jenny took a step back realistically. When I talked about just the physicality that she was bringing, it didn't quite feel the same level here. When it came to that, just like believability in a fight, but still very good. Her character stuff is working really well, obviously. But what was becoming impressive was just the idea that here in NXT UK, maybe she would become better on the other side of that, not just
Yeah.
as a, but also her wrestling. Isla Dawn looked fine. Think someone that to put a little bit of credibility on her again. Someone who they can work with, but is not quite there completely. Banks did a backstage promo that was like shaky cam. It was just kind of annoying. It was fine. And then the main event was the tag match between the United U or European Union versus the Welsh boys. And good stuff. I mean, this felt like kind of the same style as the opening tag match from the TakeOver, but honestly, just like a little bit better because it was quicker and faster. Similar to that kind of progress tag team style kind of thing. That said, the other match was in a bigger setting with more build, so it was
Right.
better in quality overall, but this felt like they executed the concepts of that a little bit better. European Union, I thought, looked better as heels here comparatively to that tag team match that was on NXT US, where I talked about that they didn't kind of
Yes.
necessarily come across completely as heels. This match, they
They
felt
seem
like
like
they
they
were.
have legs as heels.
Yeah, they felt definitely like heels, but that's the part that I then question because it feels like they're really set up as the next contenders for the tag titles, and I don't see how
Yeah.
you do a program with them as heels against the James Drake and Gibson tag team. So, but good stuff, and I think that
Did they go
Webster,
over?
European Union,
Yeah.
they may not have actually. They may have just gotten their heat back post match.
Okay, of course I haven't seen it. I would assume Morgan Webster and Andrews would have gone over to set up them as the contenders for Gibson Drake.
Yeah, I now I'm trying to think if I
But you know, I don't
didn't.
know. I'm not in the booking office, so
That's, I mean, that's what would make sense, and that's why I kind of agree with
even
you
though
on that.
I
Yeah,
think the Dieter's team is a better team.
yeah, and that's, yeah, that was the thing. I've got it here. So yes, it was, they did win. They
Okay.
won the match too. So it did. That's why coming out of it, I was like, why do they even have Gibson and Drake win the tag titles now? It just feels odd. I mean, I guess it makes sense in some ways, but in other ways, it just feels like you now don't really have solid babyface challengers for the heel tag team, and you've got really great heel tag team, but I don't think you can do a heel versus heel match that'll work with them. And yeah, I do think that the Dieter and Eichner team has legs. Where do you come down on if they should add Walter to them? Do you think that they should team with Walter? Or do you think that they should
Yes.
keep the act separate?
I think they should team with Walter. I like it.
Yeah.
Because I liked it. Then we can get some six-man tags with Dunn teaming up with Mustache Mountain. So I mean there's just and then we can get six mans, we can get tags, we can get this, that, you can occupy the TV a lot easier with the multiple mans and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it makes sense, even if it does feel a little on the nose just because of them having history with each other.
To me, visually, Walter and Dunn look ridiculous together, so
Yeah, I can see that.
the size is pretty jarring. Because I don't know how, I like Dunn, don't get me wrong, I think he's a great worker. But can he sell underneath? I mean, and I think it'd look ridiculous them having a chop exchange together,
Yeah, for
which
sure.
we will see.
They had a decent match in WXW a little while ago, but I think that Pete was kind of more of a heel and Walter was more of a babyface there in
Either
that
way,
one,
I think
so.
the dynamics to me are weird here. I think it's a hard match to pull off. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I can't judge for myself. But hey, well, Tim, it's been a fun day. Anything you want to plug?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Or no, I was gonna do yours. Follow me on Twitter at
Hey,
Lucha
there you go.
Undead.
Hey, follow me
Yeah.
on Lucha Undead. I mean, Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week. Watch wrestling, good, bad, the ugly, and have fun. And this weekend. Later, guys and gals.